turning on that September day. Were you in the yard with your wife and children, or working on some stage in L.A.? Did you stand there in shock at the sight of that black smoke rising against that blue sky? Did you shout out in anger and fear for your neighbor, or did you just sit down and cry? Did you weep for the children who lost their dear loved ones, pray for the ones who don't know? Did you rejoice for the people who walked from the rubble and sob for the ones left below? Did you burst out with pride for the red, white, and blue and the heroes who died just doing what they do? Did you look up to heaven for some kind of answer and look at yourself and what really matters? I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran. But I know Jesus, and I talk to God, and I remember this from when I was young. Faith, hope, and love are some good things He gave us. Greatest is love. Where were you when the world stopped turning on that September day? Teaching a class full of innocent children, or driving down some cold interstate? Did you feel guilty 'cause you're a survivor? In a crowded room, did you feel alone? Did you call up your mother and tell her you loved her? Did you dust off that Bible at home? Did you open your eyes and hope it never happened? Close your eyes and not go to sleep? Did you notice the sunset first time in ages, speak to some stranger on the street? Did you lay down at night, think of tomorrow, go out and buy you a gun? Did you turn off that violent old movie you're watching and turn on I Love Lucy reruns? Did you go to a church and hold hands with some strangers, stand in line and give your own blood? Did you just stay home and cling tight to your family? Thank God you had somebody to love. A singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran. But I know Jesus, and I talk to God, and I remember this from when I was young. Faith, hope, and love are some good things He gave us, and the greatest is love. I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran. But I know Jesus, and I talk to God, and I remember this from when I was young. Faith, hope, and love are some good things He gave us, and the greatest is love, and the greatest is love, and the greatest is love. Where were you when the world stopped turning on that September day?
Pretty baby, are you ready for me? Yeah, it's your good rockin' daddy down from Tennessee. If you're a country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on Survival Circle Network.
Nothing ever happened around my hometown. I ain't kind of just hanging around. But I heard someone call my name one day, and I followed that voice down a lost highway. Everybody told me you can't get far on $37 in a Jeep guitar.
Absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio. Liberty Lounge. Every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern. Right here on Survival Circle.
A good old boy never meaning no harm. Be told you never saw them in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straightening the curve.
The shooting bench is making some major changes. Starting the 1st of August, the shooting bench is only going to be on 3 days a week. 3 days? Well, not to worry. I'm going to take a couple of days off and you get an extra hour of listening time.
That's just a little bit more than the law will allow.
Catch the shooting bench now at its regular time on Monday and Wednesday, but for 2 hours. The second hour on Wednesday will be all gun talk, outdoor stuff. Your extra hour comes in on Friday, where we start at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 Eastern, and run for 3 hours. An hour to catch up on news and current events, and Liberty Lounge at its regular time. Join me for the shooting bench right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
I'm a good old boy. You know my mama loves me. But you don't understand, they keep a showing my hands and not my face on TV.
Welcome to the Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT, right now. And welcome to the Shooting Bench. It is the 8th of August. It's a Monday. We've been going with our new schedule here for 1 week tonight. Still having a little bit of trouble with it. We've had a little trouble getting Amy in here. We've been busy on weekends, and that's what's hard. I thought when we started this new schedule, we'd be, that's great. We got all weekend to record 3 hours of show. And then I'm not here on weekends and we can't do it. Had a great class down in Tucson this weekend. That's why I wasn't able to get up here and do everything that I wanted to do, but had a bunch of very devoted, very dedicated, very sincere people, preppers down in Tucson, and I was hosted by a wonderful lady, and these people were all of her friends and whatnot. So, and a lot of great questions, a lot of knowledge in the group there, but they still sat through there, and they each allowed that they all learned something out of it and had fun doing it. We did three different classes down there, and it worked out really well, I think, for everybody. And I think that in some regards, along some lines, I think some eyes were opened, and not that they aren't all on board as far as preppers go. Probably mostly during the gun related stuff that we talked about, I think there was some eyes opened and some attitudes changed a little bit for the better. So I was glad of that, and I suspect that I'll be going back down there again before too awful long. I think we established a pretty good relationship, and this may be a kind of an ongoing thing here at least from time to time. And wash that down there. All right. So, one of the classes I did down there was our very popular 8-hour disaster preparedness seminar. And it run past the 8 hours quite a bit, with a lot of good, intelligent, well thought out questions and stuff, and carried things a little farther in some regards than I usually do because of the attitude of these people. We got a little deeper into some stuff than I normally do because these guys were all pretty well pretty squared away in a lot of regards, so I was able to get more maybe what you'd call more advanced, more detailed stuff than I normally do, because it's kind of a, you know, we kind of lose people if they're just catching on, they're just wanting to learn about this, then we can run them off the tracks and discourage them pretty quickly. But I think that was just the opposite with this bunch of people. So we had a great time. I enjoyed it, and hope to go back. Although I hope to go back when it's much cooler. I've got a class coming up in Albuquerque next weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. And the following weekend, we've got a defensive carbine class here locally. That one will be with Defense Techniques Academy, who I am a guest instructor for. So I'll be helping Pete Lanteri in that class. And then, let's see, we got that and that. And then the following weekend, we may have a weekend off. We've been pretty busy with classes here through this weekend. But dry practice kits, the Glock dry practice kits are killing me. I've got so many of those things. I've got another order from another military unit for 100 of those. And so that's going to eat me up here for a couple of weeks. But other than that, all is going well. I hope everybody else had a good weekend. And I'll look and see who all is with us here in a minute. So let's look at some of the things that's happened. You know, as we get closer to the election here, the closer we get, the more I hear people talk, the more I see what the government does, the more things that I see here, the more I think that they are not possibly going to let Trump get in there. I can't imagine, as he is, for the most part, diametrically opposed to everything that the current establishment stands for. And how could they prevent this? Well, there's a number of things they could do. I keep thinking worst possible case scenario. I don't know how much worse. I mean, either the things will be so crooked and so corrupt and everything that Hillary gets in there no matter who votes for who or what. So I still strongly encourage those people that plan not to vote to be a little smarter about it and think about what could happen here. We need every conceivable advantage that we can get. You may not like Trump, but you're going to like Hillary a hell of a lot worse. But I keep thinking this came to my mind today. I hadn't given it too much thought until I was just talking to a guy here an hour or so ago. And we're talking about the possible things that could happen to keep Trump from getting in there. And I said, well, they could kill him, I guess. You know, that's happened. Wouldn't be the first time that they've gotten people out of the way. They've had, what, five people now from the Democratic National Committee that have been died in very, very close together, very suspicious accidents here in the last 6 weeks. One of the things that bothers me the worst, though, is what if they threatened Congress? And of course, we won't know that they'll ever be threatened. I mean, we can suspect that, but you can kind of know that right now, if this happens, that certainly there's going to be something going on that we didn't know about. We can suspect that they were threatened with something, and the 22nd Amendment were repealed. Now, I don't know if they would have to call an emergency session or what would happen. I don't know if it would be a back-to-back false flags that would get people to say, well, yeah, we need protection, and in that way maybe get martial law established in some strategic areas, and then repeal the 22nd Amendment and put King Obama back in there, or let him stay in there. That's pretty far-fetched, but it's just something that I thought about today, and I did not in the least bit was I pleased with the idea of that happening. So, anyway, that's the closer this election gets, the more I think that this could very much be the year of we look at the Deutsche Bank, you know, just hanging by a thread here, stumbling back and forth. We got the stuff. Do you see, I think I mentioned this the other day, probably Friday, Thursday. Oh, by the way, Friday, I apologize. I am so sorry that it was like an hour into the show when I realized, and of course people stayed Friday night. It was supposed to have been over at, 4:07. It should have been over about 7:30. Well, it was closer to 8:30, 8:45 with all the questions and everything. We went way late on our class Friday night. And I completely skipped the show. And by the time I thought about it, I was so busy that I just spaced it out. Matter of fact, I would have not even thought about it then, except I got a couple of texts from loyal listeners that reminded me of it. And I said, oh, no. Oh, geez. I guess that's live radio. That's what happens when we have life to lead and things to do. You know, I apologize for that. We'll certainly try and make it up to you this week. But the way things are going, I think we mentioned it Thursday, the fact that, if I didn't, well, I'm going to now, the fact that things have gotten bad enough in Venezuela that they are kidnapping zoo animals. Yeah, and I know we talked about this. I'm sure we did. Anyway, kidnapping zoo animals out of there and killing them, eating them. I had never crossed my mind before. I mean, I'm sure it would if I were placed in that situation. But Yeah, they just got into the zoo, and they're getting their protein right from the lion's cage there, so to speak. So, all right, well, stay with me here a minute, and I'll be back.
You have a weapon?
Yeah, a big one. How about you?
You sure you want to get cute with me? You have a backup weapon?
Never had the need.
Get one. Keep that in your suit unless I tell you to take it out. Get yourself a Glock. Lose that nickel-plated sissy pistol.
Well, I ain't afraid of dying. It's the thought of being dead. I wanna go on being me once my eulogy's been read. Don't spread my ashes out to sea. Don't lay me down to rest. You can put my mind at ease if you fill my last request. Lock me up beside the jukebox if I die. Lord, I wanna go to heaven, but I don't wanna go tonight. Fill
back to the shooting bench.
Well, it didn't get dressed up for nothing.
All right, we're back. The Wednesday night, remember, we've got our all gun, so, well, the second hour anyway, is going to be all gun related. Guns, militia, survival, outdoor stuff, whatever it takes. Got some interesting stuff for you this week, and we're going to kind of have Doc on as a fairly regular. Won't be on every week, but Doc's a wealth of knowledge and that kind of stuff, so we're going to get him in here from time to time, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Anyway, for right now, we've got some other stories we need to get into. And believe it or not, out of Portland, the grand jury there has decided that a Portland woman was justified in the fatal shooting of a guy that evidently chose the wrong house to get in there, to break into. But she had come in with her 10-year-old daughter, and they went back to her bedroom, and this, I guess the 10-year-old daughter and the 5-year-old son, they did return home in the early morning hours, and they went into the daughter's bedroom, and here's this guy, 59-year-old David, what's his name, David McCrary. And the confrontation happened there, and the gal wound up shooting a single shot and called the police, and he was pronounced dead at the scene. So that's a tough break. That's what happens. You know, we're finding several stories here recently, quite a few, where the, remember the one in Glendale, Arizona here not too long ago, where the a week or so ago, when a guy attacked a girl who happened to be wearing a gun. Wearing a gun. Didn't have to go get it out of the kitchen drawer, out from under the pillow or the bed, between the mattresses, so she was wearing it. And blasted this guy into oblivion. So I thought that was awesome. Anyway, neither the woman nor her two children were injured, so that's a good thing. And the autopsy proved that he died from a single gunshot wound. And it's funny, the guy, they said, had no significant criminal history at all. He just, for whatever reason, nobody will ever know why he chose that night in that house and to do what he did there. But at any rate, I don't have to worry about him doing it again. So that's a good thing. We'll do our little blitz here and take care of some of these news stories. I thought this was interesting. There's a let's see, was this in Washington? No, it's in Oregon, where a pastor could face charges for apparently he made national news a couple of weeks ago, or a week ago, I guess, when he said he was going to destroy an AR-15 that he won in a rifle. Raffle. But he may have, in the transferring the gun into this church for safekeeping without a background check. So whether he's going to be prosecuted, of course, if it was you or I, of course we'd be prosecuted. I mean, why would you ask? How silly. But they're still looking to see if he's going to be prosecuted. There are some people that are calling for his prosecution. They're calling for him to go to jail for breaking the law, for doing what he was not supposed to do. He started a couple of weeks ago when he was going through social media and happened on a news story there in a girls' softball league that was holding a raffle to sponsor the team's travel tournament to a tournament in California. Grand prize, AR-15. So this guy was very disturbed by the thought of kids' sports league raffling off a rifle. And he wanted to support the team's fundraising effort, so using $3,000 of funds from the church, he bought as many raffle tickets as he could in hopes of winning the rifle. How stupid was that? For a whole lot less than $3,000, he could have went down and bought one. I know he wanted to help the kids, but he took all this out of the church funds for his political agenda. So, anyway, he was said he was well aware of the thousands he spent on raffle tickets, could have purchased multiple similar weapons, but he said he not only wanted to get the rifle off the street, but also wanted to make sure he funded the girls' trip. Now, it's hard for me to believe. We've talked about this many times on the shooting bench, and that is Christians and guns. Christians and self-defense. And we're not going to go into it right now, but we have a whole show I may play one of these days again that is all on Christians and guns. Well, I don't think it's a whole show. I think it's a little less than an hour. But at any rate, it's hard for me to believe that a true, honest-to-goodness, card-carrying Christian pastor of any denomination that actually believes that the Bible is the Word of God, at least so far as it is translated correctly. It's hard for me to believe that anyone that would study the Bible would be that rabidly anti-gun. I can see, not that I agree with it at all, but I can understand how some of them may want reasonable regulations and all of that. But for the most part, if you take it as the Bible is written, there are numerous places in there that not only allows for the use of lethal force, but calls it a responsibility that's your duty to take care of that problem if it arises for you. But anyway, I guess not everybody sees it the way I do. Anyway, the problem with this, and this has been ongoing for a while, but they're just now, somebody's just now getting around to pushing this. Anyway, he said any transfer of a firearm between private parties when no money changes hands, even when no money changes hands, requires a full background check. Of course, we know that, don't we? In Oregon, anyway. Yeah, we know that. This story originated... it doesn't either. It's just talking about when the law became effective as of May 11th, 2015. Because remember, it was December 13th of 2014 when we were all in Olympia, that huge rally, the We Will Not Comply rally. So, anyway, apparently they just found out about this case just as of about 10 days ago. But if this guy who happens to be convicted of unlawful transfer of a weapon, now it's only a misdemeanor, which surprises me, he could face a maximum fine of $6,250 and up to a year in jail. So the preacher's not returning any calls for the time being, but he did tell the newspaper there that he intended to fully cooperate with any investigation or anything, so we'll let you know if we hear anything more about that. Could become an interesting story. The guy in the wrote in the caption here, if anyone thinks I'm sorry, I guess it was the preacher. If anyone thinks I'm sorry about spending $3,000 to take an AR-15 off the streets and out of our society, think again. I think your pastor is a retard. That's what I think. It's just my personal, very biased opinion here. You know, this has gotten so out of hand, so stupid. They've got it now where, you Facebookers have probably seen this, that wearing the don't tread on me insignia or wearing flag, displaying flags, with the Don't Tread on Me, the Gadsden flag, or any type of insignia, could be punishable, racial harassment. Just because the guy that designed the flag owned slaves. Not that the flag had anything to do with slaves, it's just that the guy that designed it happened to own slaves, so the flag itself now is racial. And this is just the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, among its other functions, decides what is hostile work environment and what's not. And they say that They say that they've gotten some complaints. One guy, from what I get out of the story, one single lone individual complained about this, and now they're looking at doing something about it, which is absolutely absurd to me. So the guy said that he was originally complaining about somebody wearing a cap with that insignia on it. He said that he found the cap to be racially offensive to African Americans because the flag was designed by Christopher Gadsden, a slave trader and owner of slaves. You know, I bet if you look down through history and looked at many things designed by many people, we could find things that were very much opposed to the way people believed, but still, they did it to, whether it's because of a personal belief, because of, you know, making money or whatever the case is, I don't know. So after checking all this out very carefully, it's pretty clear that the Gadsden flag originated in the Revolutionary War, we know that, in a non-racial context. It's also clear that the flag and its slogan have been used in various non-racial sentiments, such as, of course, when the modern Tea Party, that was when they really caught on. Those flags were actually a little hard to find there for a period of time. That was in 2009? It must have been 2008. When was that? I think it was 2008, before the election. So anyway. All right, well, we don't need to beat that one to death. Let's move on here to bigger and better things. It looks like the war on cops is continuing. This happened as a pipe bomb, apparently planted on a patrol car in Las Vegas. No, it wasn't in Las Vegas. Where did I get that? It was in Maryland. The car was parked at the cop's home. Someone put a pipe bomb on it. Blew the windshield out, pretty much blew the hood off. Looked like it was pretty powerful, but nobody was hurt. He was not in his car. Thankful for that. And they said it shook the whole neighborhood. Pretty good size. You look at the car, it was a pretty good size bomb. Now, whether they intended to injure or kill the officer, I don't know, but they've definitely made their point. And that may have been all it was, just trying to get a point across. But I don't think this is near over. I think this is going to continue on for some time, and I think it's probably going to escalate at some point. I guess that's rather escalated right there, just a little. Excuse me. Of course, it's not escalated as far as body count. There's been cops shot, but this is, you know, when you start doing things with explosives, even when nobody's hurt, it kind of gets your attention. You know, it seems like it's escalated a little bit to a point where even when nobody's hurt, that it seems more of a headline, more of an eye catcher there than shooting somebody. And speaking of that, there is a guy, and you all know who he is, and I'm not going to mention his name, but you can find out if you follow me on Facebook. I used to think quite a bit of the guy. I really did. Matter of fact, he was a little bit of a hero to me for a period of time. And then as it turned out, he turned out to be kind of a crook by taking control of some proprietary property and some funds and stuff that weren't rightfully his. But anyway, this guy is vehemently anti-cop. He says he's not, but anyone that wears a uniform he is Adam. I mean, I can't believe that they haven't already picked him up and put him away and made something up just to get him off the street. I mean, he's really been a real jerk here the last month or two. And, well, it's actually been longer than that. But anyway, I will stress once again that we here at the shooting bench, or me here at the shooting bench, we are absolutely, nor are any of my friends, anti-law enforcement in any remote stretch of the imagination. I need to stress that every once in a while to make sure, because I do on my have my share of times when I say that, you know, the a cop or cops in a particular instance were not trained properly, or that there's been some brutality going on with certain agencies or officer and or officers, and that does happen, and nobody disputes that. But if you think for 1 second that I think that all cops are that way, you're crazier than hell. I know a lot of cops, and the vast majority of them that I know are just like you and me. They're good people trying to do a really tough job that is difficult to do because of political correctness and liability and all the stuff that goes along with it. But they're doing the best they can. Some of them don't completely understand what they probably should be doing as law enforcement officers as far as the constitutionality of it. That doesn't make them bad people. It makes them uninformed. And for anyone to attack, arbitrarily attack people like that, cops, is just absolutely absurd to me. I don't get it at all. No. But I guess poop happens sometimes. If any of you are in New Mexico, C7, if you're out there, any of your friends or anybody, come out to Albuquerque. I'm offering some really deep discounts out there because this I was able to do that here several times in the last 2 or 3 months because logistically I have been able to save quite a bit of money by going to some of these places, either because of lodging, travel, you know, because someone has either donated to help with that, or has you know, the host of the shooting place has been able to help me out, whether with lodging or whatever. And this is no exception. This is going to be an exceptional class, and I'm offering some very deep discounts on this class. And this is the first time ever that I have offered personal defense handgun 2 and 3 in the same class. 2 and 3 meaning you can come and take the first 2 days of the class, or you can take the first 2 days of the class, then participate in the night shoot and the third day. And now we're going to see how it works out with the people that are doing it. We're mixing it up, you know. We've got a couple people that are doing the full 3 days, you know, for sure now. We've still got a week to sign people up, or 5 days anyway. And we have at least one, I think, maybe two, that are doing the two-day class only. So we're going to see how it works out, see if it's disruptive or causes any problems. I've thought it out pretty good, and I think we can do it without causing any problems. So we're going to check it out, see how it works. So anyhow, stay with me for a minute, and I'll be back shortly.
It is true that's who they were. Well, when Khrushchev came over, remember, he pounded his shoe. He met with a guy who was the Secretary of Agriculture for the Eisenhower administration. His name was Ezra Taft Benson. And then also talked to him about agriculture in the Soviet Union. This is what Ezra Taft Benson said about that meeting, and listen carefully, especially towards the end. This is what he said about that meeting with Khrushchev and the communists back in the 1960s. Special note, and remember that Ezra Taft Benson's grandchildren are probably about your age now if you're in your 40s or 50s. Listen carefully.
I have personally witnessed the heart-rending results of the loss of freedom. I have talked face to face with the godless communist leaders. It may surprise you to learn that I was host to Mr. Khrushchev for a half day when he visited the United States. Not that I'm proud of it. I opposed his coming then, and I still feel it was a mistake to welcome this atheistic murderer as a state visitor. As we talked face to face, he indicated that my grandchildren would live under communism. After assuring him that I expected to do all in my power to assure that his and all other grandchildren will live under freedom, he arrogantly declared in substance, "You Americans are so gullible. No, you won't accept communism outright. But we'll keep feeding you small doses of socialism until you finally wake up and find you already have communism. We won't have to fight you. We'll so weaken your economy until you fall like overripe fruit into our hands."
The warning from the 1960s from the Secretary of Agriculture, Ezra Taft Benson, "We'll keep feeding you socialism until you realize you've already got communism."
I told you about a story earlier in the last hour about a fella out of Arizona. And I think the line I use, if I may quote myself, was, even if you're not going to stand up for what you believe in, even if it will cost you money, at least this guy will. His name is Cope Reynolds, C-O-P-E, Cope Reynolds. He took out an ad in the local paper there in Arizona. Says, "If you voted for Barack Obama, your business is not welcome at Southwest Shooting Authority. You have proven you're not responsible enough to own a firearm." You know, as part of the desegregation of the lunch counters in America, one of the things we did wrong was that we decided that the government, which is the collective of people, could tell people how to run their businesses. What we really ought to do is let businesses decide who they want to serve. If they don't want to build a disabled ramp that's going to cost them $10,000 or $15,000, they shouldn't have to. And if you say, well, if you're not going to build a disabled ramp for my sister, mom, daughter, friend who's disabled, I won't come to your store and I'll tell everybody else not to. Okay, business decision. Businesses ought to be able to decide, a bar ought to be able to decide if they want people to smoke inside. They can post a sign out front. If you don't want to go in, you shouldn't go in. And if a fellow says, you know what, I don't want Obama supporters in here because they can't make good judgments, not only should that, and it is legal, that's not a protected class, the Obama supporters, not yet at least, even though Jamie Foxx thinks that he's our Lord and Savior. It's not only something that should be legal, it's something that we ought to support. And that's why he's on our show. Cope Reynolds, how are you, sir?
I'm well, sir. How are you?
I'm proud to know you.
Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
Tell me what happened here. You posted a note on the door at your gun shop. What kind of gun shop you got there?
Well, we've got a full service, just a regular, everyday, ordinary, run-of-the-mill gun shop. Nothing special about it at all until 2 weeks ago. And we've always been one to be very vocal with, with big, clever signs and things on our marquee. And
like
all
what?
That.
What kind of clever stuff you do?
Well, back in 2008, when we started all this stuff, the first thing that we did was we put a sign up that said when it started looking kind of dismal. And a lot of people say that we're fear mongers and we're trying to get people to buy guns because of the political climate. And I tell people, I don't care where you get them. I just said, get them. I don't care where it is. So the first one we put up when we started thinking it was going south was we had a pre-Osama bin Biden sale. And that got a lot of flack over that. And so that made us mad, so we just started putting up signs like, you know, Barack Obama just proved what, you know, why stupid people shouldn't vote. And I did some stuff about Hillary and do what? Yeah, we had free huggies for whiny liberals there for a while. And
hey, who's that in the background? Did you throw a lifeline?
That's my son. We're on the road right now. We just pulled over here where we had good reception so we could talk to you. And then
what's his name?
His name's Wes.
Wes?
Yes, sir.
He's not Little Cope?
No, he's not little. He's fixing to be 18.
Can I talk to him?
Yeah, well, let me pass my Bluetooth over there. Hold on a minute.
You got one of those things that looks like a tick on your ear, don't you?
Yeah. Hold on a second.
Hey, Wes, let me reset the topic in case somebody just tuned into the radio.
Already?
Talking to a fellow named Cope Reynolds. Actually, we're going to talk to his son. He's posted a sign on his is it a shooting range or a gun shop?
It's a gun shop.
In Arizona. Where in Arizona?
Over in Pine Top.
Oh, over in, where is Pine Top?
It's kind of, I don't know if you're familiar with where Sholo is, but it's about 10 miles south of Sholo, but it's on the kind of north and east side of Arizona.
Y'all got any illegals there?
Not many, actually.
Okay, all right. And so your dad posted a sign that said, if you voted for Obama, please turn around and leave. You have proven that you are not responsible enough to own a firearm.
Yes, sir.
Why did he do that?
Why did he do that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you asked?
Yeah.
Well, because that's really how he feels. And that's how we all felt.
Is your dad a good dad?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love him to death.
Is he a disciplinarian?
Yes, sir.
What's the most important thing your dad ever taught you? Like that bit of advice that you go, man, when I think about him, this is the line that my dad, as my dad always says, what would you say that is?
Oh, man, there's tons of stuff. Mostly it had to do with, you know, firearms and just life in general.
I'm not saying you would, but if it came down to it physically, if he wasn't your dad, could you whip him?
No.
Is he a big boy?
Yeah, he's pretty hefty.
Like, I didn't ask if he was fat. How big is he?
Oh, well, he's 6'2", 6'3".
How much does he weigh?
250.
What about you?
Me? I'm not as big as him. I'm maybe, you know, 6'1", and 165.
Oh, you're just a little feller.
Yeah.
All right. You're proud of your dad then, huh?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
What are you going to be when you grow up?
Any luck, just like him.
You going to run the shop?
Possibly.
Y'all make any money there?
Yeah, especially over the last couple weeks.
What is the highest markup on a gun? Like, what's the one gun that you can make the most money on?
We probably make the most money on Glocks, just because we're the big, just real big fans of them.
I'm a big fan of the Glock. I carry the 19. I know that's a small gun for a big old boy like me. But if I'm going to carry a gun, that's what my brother carries as his service weapon. Uh-huh. He's a sheriff's deputy. And I just find it's, I mean, you're not probably not going to kill somebody, but it's got enough stopping power and it's not too burdensome. It's not too bulky.
It's got plenty of power behind it. I carry the 17 almost everywhere I go.
Oh, all right. I don't know if it's a good idea, but I stuff mine down in my underwear. You think that's a bad idea?
I don't know. It depends on where you're at or what you're doing.
I put it down under the bottom part down there, you know, where you tuck.
If you can get it out quickly, I guess then if it works for you. I mean, I would never wear mine right there, but it's all personal preference, I guess.
I do a Velcro deal, so I pop it loose from there.
Oh, okay, yeah, that would make sense.
Where do you carry yours?
I carry it right on my hip, right behind the hip bone.
Oh, you carry it for all the world, for all the honest world to see?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Since I'm only 17, I'm not allowed to carry concealed yet until I'm 21. So.
But you can open carry?
Yes, sir, as long as I'm with my dad or you know, a legal guardian, or he's given a note to somebody that I can carry with him, at least here in Arizona.
Fair enough. Well, we're big fans of your dad in all the markets where the Michael Berry Show aired. You ever heard of the Michael Berry Show?
I have, a couple times.
Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. I'm just kidding you, Wes. Thanks for being on with us. I'll give you folks a phone number for these people. Call them and tell them you appreciate what they're doing. Solid folk, the Reynolds family.
That is the whitest black man I have ever seen.
Michael Berry, the other white meat.
Okay, there you go. That was one of the many interviews we did back when I put the sign up that Michael Berry was talking about there. And my son got his couple of minutes of fame there. He had a good time talking to Michael Berry, and that was pretty fun. But anyway, that's time to start the new hour here, so we thought I'd throw those in there for the heck of it. Let's see here. Let's get a couple more stories in. We got a bunch of them to do. Try to get caught up. The I guess Chris Kyle, Brad Cooper, who played Chris Kyle in what was that, American Sniper, have been catching a little grief over him. I guess Republicans have been criticizing for attending the Democratic National Convention. And he said he wasn't expecting that. He said the Republicans were up in arms that I was there watching the president speak, because he played the late Chris Kyle in the movie. Kyle was, known for his best-selling biography that detailed his tours of combat and voicing conservative opinions. So Republicans have kind of taken him to task, Bradley Cooper, taking him to task for this. So now, I don't think if I would have been in the area and had the money and could and take the time off and everything else, I would have gone to the Democratic National Convention. I'm a firm believer that we should, keep our enemies close. I listen to what my opponents, my people that are opposed to the things that I say and do. I don't shun them. I don't, I may not necessarily want to rub shoulders with them and go have dinner with them, but I might go listen to them talk. I might listen to their radio show. I might, watch their TV show or something, just to see what's going on. I would have gone to the Democratic National Convention. Of course, they probably wouldn't let me in, but I would have gone if they'd let me. Of course, it would have had to have been next door. I couldn't afford to go all the way out to, where in the hell it was. But nevertheless, I don't know what this guy's attitude is. I don't know what his politics are. I don't know anything about him. I'm just saying, I would have gone and see what they had to say firsthand, instead of depending on mainstream media to let me know what was said there. And I don't see a thing in the world wrong with that. But evidently, some Republicans did. Well, anyway, it's one of those things. Man, you just can't make everybody happy, can you? There's always somebody. Donald Trump has come out with a new, it's not new. He's been talking about it here for the better part of this year. But talking about taking on federal land control, and there was a time that he had something to say about the refuge. He said you just can't let people take over federal property, but I think he's been educated since then. He's changed his mind on it a little bit, so we'll see how that turns out. But I think he is opposed to the federal government owning like 85% of the land in Nevada and so very, very much land in all of the states out here west of the Mississippi. So we'll see how he does. If he gets in there, we'll see if he lives long enough to get in there and show us how he's going to do. Well, I'll skip this one. This is not... It's kind of old. Six people indicted in break-in sheriff's office in Mount Vernon. We'll let that one go for now. It's kind of a... I've had some of these stacked up here for so long that it's not doing any good. You know, it's interesting that some DNA scientist here, I mean, this is very interesting, particularly if you're a Mormon. Very interesting that DNA scientists claim now that the Cherokees are originally from the Middle East. Said Cherokees have lived in the southeastern United States for over 10,000 years. Cherokees developed and cultivated corn, beans, and squash, the three sisters, along with sunflowers and other crops. And their archaeological evidence, early written accounts, and oral history of the Cherokees themselves show the Cherokees as a mighty nation controlling more than 140,000 square miles with a population of 36,000 or more. And but anyway, they've come up with a relatively new thing here that says in the, let's see, who is this guy? His name's Adair. John Adair wrote a book, The History of American Indians. And in there, he says that he extrapolated a belief that all Native Americans were the descendants of the 10 lost tribes of Israel. He says he genuinely admired Native Americans and was married to a Chickasaw woman. However, his popular theory was twisted during the American Revolution to something else. In the new version, the 10 lost tribes of Israel had built the thousands of mounds that dotted the landscape of eastern North America, but the Indians had killed all the civilized Jews. Frontier preachers gave sermons which demanded that their parishioners go out and slaughter the evil savages who had killed the civilized Jews. So, interesting story. I don't really have anywhere to go with that or anything. It just kind of caught my eye, so I just thought I'd throw it in there with the rest of them, just on account of... You know, during this interesting stuff right here, this was very timely. This, in my disaster preparedness classes, one of the things that I talk about... pretty extensively to try, and a lot of people don't want to believe it. As a matter of fact, we had a couple of people in the class here over the weekend that they didn't take offense to it by any means. They just was kind of taken aback that I would say that. I guess it's something that they hadn't thought about, and that is the fact that there are going to be hordes and packs of feral dogs. Dogs that people can't afford to feed anymore that have been turned loose and set free to fend for themselves. And we've talked about this before. Last time we talked about it, we talked about they say there's something to the tune of 20,000 dogs loose in the Detroit area. That Detroit was probably the feral dog capital of the country right now for that very reason, because people can't afford to take care of them anymore. Well, as luck would have it, this, let's see, today's the 8th, 7th, 6th. There is, I was talking about this during the class on the 6th. Unbeknownst to me, on account of I was doing another class on the 5th, and it kept me tied up all day long between traveling and teaching. I was tied up every minute of the day from 6 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night. So, and while I was here, the day before I was talking about this, there came a new story come out of Dallas, and it says that there are unattended dogs to the tune of 8,700. On the loose just in the southern parts of the city. The story says, as consultants drove through the streets of southern Dallas this summer to document the city's increasing loose dog population, they found some residents walking with sticks in hand in case they had to fend one off. Residents of the southern part of the city, home to some of Dallas's poorest neighborhoods, have complained for decades that roaming dogs, whether stray or left free to wander by owners, On Thursday, the Boston Consulting Group hired by the city released a report that estimated there were 8,700 loose dogs in the area. 87, that's a lot of damn dogs. They say this is the first time that the officials have tried to quantify the problem. It's not that it's 24/7, but there's constantly dogs out there and people can't even leave their house. But it is a prevalent enough problem that it's really impeding people's quality of life, such that there's diminished walking down the street. Sometimes you can't go into a park. The issue gained increased attention after Antoinette Brown, 52, was mauled to death by six dogs in May. The authorities found her with more than 100 bites across her body. The consultant's report said dog bites in the city had increased 15% a year since 2013. So that's, what, roughly 45% since 2013. Local officials and animal welfare advocates say that it would be wrong to imagine feral packs of aggressive dogs prowling the streets. The biggest, that doesn't make any sense. The biggest increase in dog bites comes from where dogs that were owned but not on a leash. Well, yeah, that's what most of these dogs probably are, actually. The report said various dogs involved in the issue agreed, various groups involved in the issue agreed that educating dog owners was a key part of the solution. I don't think it's because the dog owners, for the most part, are uneducated. I think it's because they just they're turning them loose because they can't feed them. And they breed and they have puppies out under houses and stuff, and then there's more. And they just got through saying it's in the poorest part of the city. It's not the people that can afford to feed their dogs. It's the people that can't afford to feed their dogs. They say, yeah, that's my dog. He'll be in, you know, later on this evening after he goes out and finds something to eat. He said loose dogs are more common in poorer communities throughout the United States than some people realize. The causes and intensity of the problem vary, but the low-income areas share little access to veterinary care. Few big box stores or pet supply retailers and a lack of basic information or services for pet owners. So, in Dallas, the difference between the poverty-stricken South and the more affluent North is stark. The consultants found 135 loose dogs during their census, which covered 176 linear miles of southern Dallas, and was conducted between 6 a.m. and 7:30 a.m. from January 28th. To August 2nd. June 28th to August 2nd. So basically just a little over a month for an hour and a half every morning is the way I'm reading this. They found just one dog in the 59 linear miles of North Dallas covered by the same census. In the North, 80% of dogs are spayed or neutered compared to 15% in the South. So there it goes again. And the reason why is because people can't afford it. There are just three veterinarians in all of southern Dallas, making it difficult for pet owners to access care or get their pets spayed or neutered. I have three within a half a mile of my house in northern Dallas, he said. So, said, you can round up and kill every dog on the streets of Dallas today, and in 6 months we'd have the same problem because the humans that caused the problem. Well, yeah, we understand that. That's not in question of whether the humans are causing the problem or not. What the question is that it's not even a question. I guess it's a statement, is that these dogs are a problem. They will continue to be a problem, and they will be 5 times, maybe 10 times worse problem when poop hits the fan and people start turning dogs loose by the thousands even more. Guy said, I really believe that it's important that Southern Dallas be invested in and nurtured to grow, and that's really hard to do when there are 9,000 dogs running around that part of it. Well, yeah, I'm sure that affects property values and stuff there for sure. I'm going to save that one for gun night there. There was, you So one of the things that we did over, what was it? It was Friday during this class here is I programmed, and what well, I didn't program that many, but I taught people to program their radios. Had a big, you know, like 6 hours of communications training. That included secure communications. It included texting, emails, telephone calls, radios of all descriptions, CB, MERS, FRS, GMRS, HAM, everything you can think of. And these people were very, very receptive to this because they really needed to figure out how to talk on these radios. And it kind of, you know, they have, they're very lucky. Anybody in the Tucson area, if they reach a particular repeater down there, then they can talk virtually all over the state. And I'm lucky here because I'm right next door. Excuse me, my goodness. I'm right next door to a repeater that reaches that repeater, which means that I can talk pretty much all over the state. So, for you guys that haven't yet gotten into your ham radio stuff, I really encourage you to do that. I really, really do. It's as I said during this class, and I've said on this show before, that communication is tied for first place with two other items, and that is defense, guns and ammo, training, and sustenance, food and water. Communication is right up there tying for the number one position. So, if you haven't done it yet, I've told you an easy way to get your ham license. I've told you, you know, how to go about the whole process and everything. And it's just not the same to go out and practice on an FRS radio. It's not the same at all. You know, between the distance and the type of people that you encounter and all of that, in my mind, it's imperative. It's absolutely essential that you try to practice as much as possible or be around someone. You know, maybe you're just so vehemently opposed to getting a license that you just flat won't do it. Well, maybe you can know a friend that has a license. Maybe you can go over to their house or over to their shop or their garage or whatever and visit with them a little bit and have them do some time and explain to you how the process works. And go over there a couple of nights a week for, you know, for a month or so and see if you can kind of get it down. Maybe you can, you might be taking a bit of a chance, I'm not sure. But maybe you could actually talk them into allowing you to talk on their radio a little bit under their license. I'm not sure that's entirely legal. I'd have to look that up. But at any rate, if nothing else, you know, get over there and learn how to do it. Listen to the other people. See how to talk through a repeater, and find out about what they call nets. And the basic procedure of doing this, it's quite different than FRS or CB or something. But anyway, all right. We have another very sad, very tragic story just came out today. Came out just a few hours ago, actually. One of our faithful listeners sent this to me. 6-year-old playing with a gun, Southern Idaho, killed himself. best they can figure, the boy was playing with a gun, shot himself in the head. This was in Washington County, Idaho. 4:30 in the afternoon, said the boy was outside with his mother and boyfriend as they worked on a vehicle. At some point, the kid went in the house, found a gun in the bedroom. So, all accidents 100% preventable. This accident was the parents' fault. You do not, under any circumstances, ever, for any reason, leave guns laying unattended, loaded guns unattended, when there are even the remotest possibility of children being present. Actually, it don't matter whether it's children or not. You just don't leave loaded guns unattended, period. It's just not a good idea. I don't care who's present. I don't care if you live alone. It's just not a good idea. It's bad medicine. So it looks like a boy was playing with a gun when it fired. No, it didn't fire. He fired it. Bullet struck him in the head. Another adult was inside the home in the kitchen when it happened. Sheriff's Department's investigation into it said it appears accidental. An official manner of death has not been determined. Well, I'm sure that won't be too terribly hard to figure out. None of the adults at the home when the shooting happened have been charged with a crime. You know what? They ought to be. They damn sure ought to be. Whoever, you know, maybe, I don't know, both the parents, one or the other of the parents, I'm not sure which or either, whatever. Excuse me, goodness. But somebody sure ought to be. Leaving that gun unattended, as far as I'm concerned, is a criminal offense. It's not a criminal offense until somebody gets killed. Somebody gets injured. And when that happens, in my mind, it becomes a criminal offense. Sad, sad story. I hate it. Well, stand by here just a second. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. Had to go outside for just a minute. Looks like we've got a little bit of trouble going on out there. We've lost two chickens here just in the last couple of days to coyotes, and it looks like he's coming back. So I'm going to have to spend the better part of the evening seeing if I can figure out how to make this not happen anymore. So I'm going to have to cut this one short, and I'm sorry about that. And I'm sorry about Amy's show. That was my fault, not being able to get her recorded. We'll try to do better next week. We will be definitely back regular time tomorrow, or I will be anyway. Not tomorrow, Wednesday. Wednesday and Friday. So anyhow, I'm going to get on out of here, and we'll see you all day after tomorrow. Thank you very much for joining me. We'll see you then. Bye-bye. Well, that wraps up another edition of The Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for The Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me. No explanation, no reconciliation. No, let's talk it over. Number I can call. Goodbye says it all.